That probably was. Okay, and we found a different... Wow, I didn't realize that folders could get full on this. Yeah, okay, I don't know if I should record that. Okay. Yeah, okay. Last time we spoke about the basic Masorah Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah methodology is part of it. And as stated last time, the core of Torah methodology is unchanged. And as, you know, we say, can't resist saying this one here. You know, people here in Torah Shraga always seem to think that, you know, they'll come to me to get sympathy about learning too much Gemara. You know, that's like a classic Shana Aleph. I don't know, does anyone here suffer from that problem? I know Josh does not suffer from the problem. Josh, I know that's a problem you don't suffer from.
What's the problem?
Rabbi, why do we have to learn so much Gemara? Gemara in the morning, Gemara in the afternoon. Too much Gemara.
That's a problem.
Okay, I said, didn't feel like this year's Night Seder suffering. Maybe Benji, that's bothering you? You can tell me the truth, it's fine. It bothers a lot. It bothers at least half the guys in Torah Shraga. So if it bothers you, then you're, it's not, I'm not, you know.
It bothers me.
Bothers you?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Fine, so why do we need them? So they come to me, they figure, I teach Rach. I'm the guy to come to get some, you know, to get, what do we call it, to get validated that we shouldn't be learning so much Gemara. And so I like, I was disappointed. I said, no, you have to learn Gemara. I said, but you sure, but you are. Let me just, Bekitsur. The only way you can ever get down to the core and know what real Torah methodology is with proper learning Gemara. You have to, what they call in yeshivas, quotes, learn how to learn. I'm not sure if that's quite as complicated as they make it out in yeshivas, but you do have to know how to learn. You have to reach a competency level. Until you reach that, then you are inevitably out of depth when you're trying to learn Tanakh. And the reason why is very simple. Now, in the V'yom Achronim, it's a little more complicated. And I'm actually curious. I'd have to think about it. Someone would have to like pin me up against a wall for me to explain what methodology is necessary in the V'yom Achronim. It's a good and difficult question. But in the V'yom Rishonim, inevitably questions come up. And you cannot intelligently answer any question in Chumash Nevi'im Achronim if you don't know how to learn a sugya properly. I don't know what I'm supposed to tell you. The methodology used by the vast majority of Parshani and Mikra is classic Torah methodology. It's assumed you, quote, know how to learn a Gemara. And there's nothing to do, guys. That's the, you know, whatever. That's how it is. That's where the revelation of how we learn is. It's in Shas. And it's the only way you'll ever penetrate what learning is in a real way is with Shas. Now, in a practical sense, there's a different issue. And there's, at the end of the day, you know, so there's the ideal and there's the practical. And it's ideally best to be always taking steps, practically taking steps towards the ideal. That was clear, sort of? Are you? Ideally, even if you're not at the ideal right now, you should be taking the steps to reach it. Practically speaking, that doesn't always happen. Practically speaking, it'd be a very nice, it'd be, here, I'll tell you a story, just to illustrate what I mean. I have an old friend. I'm like diverging a little more because tomorrow night we're going to be doing this more or less. Something, so we might as well do this. Yeah, I have an old friend, Mama Shinda. Whenever he's like 2-3 years younger, he's like two years or so younger than me. We're in yeshiva about two years together, approximately. Very fine person. Worked in yeshiva X amount of years. Did this, did that, did the next. He's actually South African, and he started out in South African universities. It was in his day. If you changed degrees, there's no such thing as carrying over credits. So it took him a long time to finish to get a degree in accounting, which he ended up getting a degree in accounting. He started out doing a degree in mathematics, and then he decided that wasn't so practical, so he changed over to accounting. But he lost, like, let's say he worked on the degree in math for 2 years, and then he had to work on the degree on accounting for 3.5 years or something like that. He didn't, like, gain that much. Like, in an American university, you wouldn't lose that much if you went from math to accounting. You lose a little bit, you wouldn't lose that much. I mean, there's core courses, whatever. I don't know if you guys know all about that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not, whatever. In South Africa, he lost everything, basically, and he basically had to start over. Anyway, he finished accounting. worked as an accountant, both in South Africa and here, and hated it with a bloody passion, as South Africans would say. Pushit hated it, and he went into programming. Anyway, we get there. He was going from one job to another a couple of years ago in Israel, and his second job was with Israel Aircraft, which is like, you need security clearance to work for Israel Aircraft, okay? You cannot work for Israel Aircraft. So it takes longer than you would expect to get security clearance. So he really thought, they told him it's going to take, let's say, 3 to 6 months to get security clearance. So like at 2.5 months, he told his boss in his first job, oh, by the way, you should know that I have a job offer from Israel Aircraft, and I'm hoping security clearance can come through in the next month or so. And whatever, you know. Bye-bye. Whatever. So the guy fired him on the spot, more or less. Maybe the next day or 2 days later. Whatever. Anyway, so what's the point of the story is so he was, it turned out that he was out of work for like 9 months.
Well,
because security clearance could take a long time.
Don't count your eggs before they hatch.
What?
Don't count your eggs.
That's right. Well, he didn't. It was he was in a what we call in a not such so simple situation where Menschlichkeit said that he should tell his boss that he has another offer on the table. And even though he was aware that there may be repercussions once he did it. So anyway, he was fired. Of course, I'm sure he got compensation for it, because when someone fires you, they have to give you comp. But he had to do something with himself, so he went into a coma. And he went into a coma for 9 months. And all I can tell you is, there are not many people who could do that. They're just not. He had been working for at least 10 years, if not closer to 15 or 20, there are just not many people who, after having worked for a significant amount of time, can go sit every day down, even just for a morning, even for 3 hours, 4 hours, and learn in a serious fashion. Ashrecha, if you're able to do that, that's quite a life accomplishment. But most people are not able to do that. It's just the blunt facts of life. I'm just telling you the blunt facts of life, you know, from an older perspective. So in theory, a lot of people should. And I'm not talking about people who never learned how to learn. I'm talking about people who once knew how to learn. It's not easy. It's just not easy. So, anyway, it's a good thing to do. It's a nice theoretical thing to do. It will improve your qualitative connection to the Jewish religion in many more ways than you could believe. But the other side of the coin is we have to be practical. And yeah, it takes good self-knowledge, and I would advise consulting with someone who can help you make good decisions in issues like this. But again, in theory, it's easy to say what's right in theory. But back to what we were really talking about. I just couldn't resist that. It was such a good side topic there, wasn't it? Okay. We zoomed through the Torah and science issues, and I just want to go back over my opinion about it is you know, anything directly pertinent to Torah, obviously the Torah has to give accurate information on. Anything directly pertinent to Torah, the Torah has to give accurate information on. What information the Torah contains in it about science, well, that's what I say, is whatever you think is important, the Torah has to speak about. If you think that nuclear physics are very important and man can't live without nuclear physics, then Torah must speak about it. And I'll just leave it at that. I spoke about that last time. Okay, bye, Jim. Now we are on to the topic of literal. When should we take a minor agadata in a literal fashion, and when should we not? That's our next step. We see a lot of, as we noted, the Rambam, Rambam's to the Rambam hints to them. We find a lot of maimari agadata, statements in agadata, states in drashim, which say very like not so simple things. And how do we understand them? What is the proper understanding of things like that? Okay. Okay, so we'll go back to the Rambam, of course. There's a Rambam in Igeres Tchias HaMeisim. There's a Rambam in Igeres Tchias HaMeisim that says the following statement. The Rambam says, the Rambam really differentiates between, I mean, it's implicit, he doesn't quite say it explicitly, but you understand in the Rambam the following thing. It's easier to take a Maimer Agadata and say it's allegorical than it is Pesukim. Psukim, you have to be more careful to be docha them, to say they're allegorical, metaphorical, than you do Maimari Agarata. Maimari Agarata, there is more, I don't know what's the right word, leeway. Excellent. There's more leeway to say this is not to be taken literally. That we understand from the Rambam. The question they asked the Rambam was, why don't you say Tchiyas HaMeisim is an allegory? Why don't you say Tchiyas HaMeisim is allegorical? Why are you insisting on learning it literally? Now, it's a fascinating thing, and I haven't gone over this Rambam in a number of years, about, let's say, 3 or 4. And maybe it's a little more than that even. But I'm like sort of like this. And this is a very fascinating question. This is a fascinating question, which I'm not sure what the real answer to it is. But we know the Rambam lists Tchiyas HaMeisim as one of the Agila Ikra, right? We're aware of that. Rambam lists Tchiyas HaMeisim as one of the Agila Ikra. And it's not 100% clear why. On one hand, that's one side of the coin. Is this okay? Fine. It could be it's Mufurish in the Mishnah. Wait a second. It's explicit here in the Mishnah.
He just wants to be on the argument.
It's Mufurish in the Mishnah. Ve'elu she'ein lam chelak ol Avraham et chiyus ha'meisim ein chiyus ha'meisim. It's explicit in the Mishnah, and. Okay, the Rambam could have tried to say that's not literal, but the Rambam certainly didn't want to do that. And I say you understand, it's sort of explicit in davening, you know, with the second bracha in Shemona Esrei.
Yeah.
Ata gibor olam
Hashem. Which is weird because
it's
the first time
that he's never done. Okay, so the Rambam states. The Rambam in the Geres Tchiyas HaMeisim says, the following equation, which I'm going to tell you. I'll first say it over, and then we'll work on it. The Rambam says is if something's possible, like Tchiyas HaMeisim, which is possibility, then I should learn it literally. If something is impossible, Taharim Tukadu Ka'elim. A Yagar Zev in Keves, the mountains were dancing. The mountains were dancing like rams. So that we clearly learn metaphorical. We learn that poetic. Right? The statement, the Rambam, the Roshitas HaRambam is that the famous prophecy in Yeshaya, the Gar Zev in Keves, that the lamb will lie down with the sheep. The Rambam says you have to learn that metaphorically, not literally.
But the sheep or the wolf?
The lamb will lie down with the wolf. He should learn that metaphorically. He learns it means bittul, the negation of bad midos. That's how the Rambam learns that.
Did he ever write about Parashas?
About which part?
If the story of creation should be taken literally.
I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure he does take it literally. I'm not sure what you're about. Okay. Let's step back now.
It's like the popular theory nowadays to say that.
Okay. I know the popular theories. To say it's an allegory, a metaphor, chas v'shalom, you can't say that. You have to say you could say what Schroeder wants to say. I don't think that's the right mahalach, but I'm not going to Schroeder. Genesis and the Big Bang. Never read that one? So I read Genesis and the Big Bang.
What is wrong with
him? It's like this. Let's step back. And I said already that I think it's a mistake. I think I said that here. I know I said that to Zach. That I think it's a mistake to make completely direct correlations from how the Rambam dealt with things to exactly how we're going to deal with things. Not that we should learn from the Rambam without a question. And if we didn't have the Rambam, I would be, you know, we're really small people today. That's one thing that you have to understand. We're really small people. We do not have the intellectual clout standing penetration of Tyra, etc., that the Rambam had, and that's like a very gross understatement. That's a very gross understatement. So I want to use the mechanics of the Rambam, even though I'm going to not quite go, not say it the exact same way, simply because, as pointed out before, it was definitely last year, the gap between the science system the Rambam was working from and the science system we're working from is much, much greater. Our gap is much greater. Modern science is an absolute denial of any form of spiritual life, and Greek science was not. So I think to go in a direct form, a direct jump from the Rambam mechanism and the Rambam structure, I think that's a mistake. Because it's true, the Rambam says, I said this to Zach, and he looked at me like I'm totally wild, whacked out of my brains. Like, the Rambam says explicitly, Tchias HaMeisim is possible. Quotes, scientifically possible. Why not? I'm not sure what the Rambam means with that, but let's go on. I do have a theory now about it, but I'm still not 100% sure. So therefore, the Rambam says I have to take it literally. Okay, if the Rambam had, modern science would not agree with that statement. Modern science would say that Tchias HaMeisim is not physically possible. So the Rambam today would reverse what he's saying. I really doubt that, because it's a Mishnah Mefurish. Just wait a second. It's a Mishnah Mefurish. It's the Pasha understanding of Shemona Esrei, which the Rambam had. And you know, the differences between Ashkenaz and Sephard Nusach is not in the first two brachot. Avot and Gvurot are the same. We change in the middle. You guys change everything. We kept the old Nusach. You guys were adding things in.
What if they just had a different understanding of medical death than we did? I mean,
I don't know. That, you're asking a lot of questions, which I don't mean to shirk them completely, but I do mean to say that we do have a technical issue. We don't even understand what they did understand. And let's just step back and let me explain how I think I understand the Rambam right now. I'm not sure about this, but this is my theory, my present theory. We have to be very, you know, you have to look. The idea that Tchias HaMeisim is literal is the, what we say, the Pashup Shah and Chazal all over the place. And I honestly don't believe the Rambam will change that. It's impossible to say what the Rambam would say if he'd be alive today, because the Rambam is not alive today. Okay, anyway, sort of like this. The point is like this. Is modern science doesn't believe in the existence of the soul. It doesn't understand how the neshama, how the nefesh connects to the body. Once I accept that as a fact, that the real source of life in a person is his nefesh, and in an animal is the nefesh bahamas, then I can already start talking about Tchias HaMeisim as a fact of life. That the soul has in it the intrinsic ability to revitalize bone, etc. Modern science doesn't admit that, doesn't hold that something which is quote, not quote, quantifiable, when they're sort of right. It's certainly not in scientific fashion quantifiable. But in spiritual fashion, as best as we could see, it is quantifiable. As we say, it's a nevuah mefureshes in Yechezkel. Familiar with the nevuah? The Valley of Dry Bones?
It's in
Chezkel Amud Zayin?
Yeah.
The Valley of Dry Bones? We're familiar with that prophecy? Okay.
The bones
reconnect. Then he says, then the skin, then the, this comes back, and the skin comes back. There's no neshama. The neshama comes back. Okay, very good. So once you have that understanding, then you can, as we say the statement that Tchias HaMeisim is, quotes, impossible. But that, for saying the statement that Tchias HaMeisim is a scientific process, is a natural possibility, is absolutely dependent on a core understanding of how the body and the soul are connected to each other. Modern science is in denial of the existence of the soul, so it's, as Rabbi Meisman would say, Ma'ein, it's out of bounds and has no right to express its opinion.
Well,
yeah, okay, that's just truth to that. There's truth to that. But at the end of the day is in blunt, straight terms, there's no way to really quantify the existence of the soul, you understand? The existence It's in a purely scientific fashion. There's no way to talk about it.
Right.
You understand? You don't hear. I never told you my father's statement about what science is. And what did that with you guys? I don't think I did that this year with you. No? Okay. Okay. People always just ask, "Well, father, you're a scientist. Your father's as much a scientist as anyone else. You're a scientist. How do you believe in religion? How do you believe in God?" So my father's standard answer when I was your age was, "Well, it's not difficult at all. What's science? What's science? Well, define science. Define science. I told you some stories. You guys should be able to get it.
Sachs's definition of science is the how.
My father holds that Rabbi Dr. Sachs shoop, poop.
Doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. Science is the collection and analysis of data. That's what science is. Collect information and you analyze information. It's how. Okay, that's not terrible. It's a way, scientists want to understand process if possible. Why? And that's what he's trying to say. It's how and not why?
Yeah, he says.
Oh, yeah, there's truth to that. That's not bad.
Religion is the why and science is the how.
There's truth to that. That's not bad. There's truth to that. I'll take that one back. Sorry, Dr. Sachs. I take that back. Yeah, okay. But again, the how, I mean, you shouldn't be fooled. And I think I've said this before here, but if not, I'll say it again. Don't be fooled in thinking that everything, certainly everything they present to you in high school is fact. Much of it is theory, not fact. And you go on in life, you'll find that out.
In terms of science.
Much of it is theory. They don't present, it takes getting relatively deep into a topic to get down to the guts and bones of it, so they show you what really is there and what's real fact and then what is interpolated and what is theory. It takes pretty deep. The thing is when we're learning a Daf Gemara with you, we don't have as much. You have the core material in front of you. Of course, you're in Shana Aleph, Tar Traga, and even in a lot of other places, it takes getting to a relatively high level to realize what is really core and what is really theory in terms of a Daf Gemara. I can explain that more, but not now. I'm just telling you, but you're a lot closer to it. You're a lot closer when you're learning the Gemara to core and real, what's the real fact of the topic than you are in more or less any other topic you're looking at. Okay, Vayter. We're clear now? We're with each other? Okay. Okay. Let me give you a different example. Right. Second time today. This is called bad luck for the day. Let's see if I messed this recording up also. No, I didn't. Baruch Hashem. This one stayed in. What? I should put it in my pocket. I don't know. Maybe I should. Let's try that. So the question is my phone going to hit the wrong button? I'll take my phone out of my pocket. Okay. Good move. Okay. Let me give you one example. Yeah, what's this? This one on the side here is. Okay, we'll get back to that. Okay. It says in Chumash that when Adam eats from the Eitz HaDaas, when he eats from the Eitz HaDaas, he's going to die. Now, the implications of that are that if he wouldn't have eaten from it, he wouldn't die. Right? Correct? So, philosophers and modern science agrees with this, that l'chara, man, by the fact that he's physical, is subject to physical decay and has to die. So how do you understand that? How do we understand that? This is, again, it's much more
from a scientific point of view or
from a Chumash point of view. How do you understand it? L'maisa tachlis, Adam v'chara had to die. So what do you mean if you eat from the Eitz HaDaas, you're going to die? Even if you don't eat from it, you're going to die. So the Ran says, the Drushas Ran says, the Ramban probably says this also, but not quite as clear. The Ramban probably says this, it's not quite as clear. You look at the Ramban, you can say, the Ramban says, the Ran says it explicitly, okay? And the Ran doesn't bother quoting the Ramban, and the Ran quotes the Ramban, the Drushas, many, many times. So you can take it, whatever. Let's not worry about exactly why right now. The Ran says that the point is that if Adam would not have eaten from the Eitz HaDaas, the Nefesh HaAdam would have revitalized his physical body. In other words, Ahakanami, the physical body, by being physical, is by definition subject to decay and has to die. Like everything else physical in the world has decay to it. So why should Adam have originally not died? And it's the Ran, because Nishmas HaAdam, the original Neshama Tahara, pure soul of man, the Ran's not a Makabal either. The original Neshama of man would have had in it the power to revitalize man's body and keep man alive forever. Okay. So this is just an example of, is when we talk about possible and impossible, we have to take in mind Torah thought to it, not just quotes, contemporary scientific thought, because as I said, contemporary scientific thought is just an absolute denial of spirituality and what real spirituality can really do.
But this can be reconciled, because we have aging genes, and like there's a whole study now about aging and how we can stop aging. So you can posit that back then these aging genes weren't active.
That's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. I've said before, and I say it seriously, I don't personally believe that the modern human psychos has the strength to deal with a 200-year life, and certainly not a 900-year life. I just don't believe we have it. In other words, if we look in Chumash, and I'm going with the Ramban, Rashi and the Ramban in the mainline approach, man before the Mabul averagely lived 900 years. From the Mabul to Mabul to Haflaga lived around 400 years.
If a person's not productive, they will drive themselves crazy. That's just sort of like life. That's like, part of the life. When you're young, you think life's having fun. But when you get older, you see that if you're not productive, then having fun doesn't get you that far. There's only so much fun can do for you. What am I supposed to tell you? People have to be productive. We're just the human, the base, the core of the human psychos is so weak today. I don't believe even the lives that we have, we're always not sure what to do with them. And certainly if a person would be able to live 150, 200 years, I don't know, I don't think, I'm quite skeptical of a person being able to be happy and productive for such a long time. So whatever, I don't know. We'll see. As we say, all these genetic things. Who knows what's going to happen when you start tampering with very deep genetic, material. It's not simple at all. Okay, Vaita. Now, so Tachos, what do we do? Tachos, getting down to our question. We want to know, when do we take a Maamar Gadol to serious? Literally, not seriously. We always take it seriously. That's what we started out. Seriously, we always take it seriously. How do I know how to take it seriously? How do I know what and when not to take it? Literally, not seriously, we always take it. When do I say it means what it means, and that's what it means? When do I not do that? So there's no simple rule. I hate to say, some people are simplifiers and some people are complicators. I'm a complicator. Booker Tov. In case you didn't get that by this time of the year, now you know I like making things complicated. There's nothing better than saying it's a machlokas, right? Sorry. So I don't believe there's a simple rule. I mean, I wish there was. I don't believe there is. I'm going to get into details in a minute. Some details. I don't believe there is. But as we say, Lo Alman Yisrael, the Jewish people, Baruch Hashem, have had a lot of big people through the ages working on these issues. And if we didn't, we certainly wouldn't be. We certainly do not have the competency level necessary to make these decisions on our own. We just don't. There are a lot of important tools for Agadata, Marsha, Maral, and others. Generally speaking, the Maral will take most of these, not all, but most of these wild Agadot HaGemaras totally not literally. For example, I don't know, Gittin, anyone learn Gittin?
Gittin.
Do you know the famous stories about Shlomo and Ashmedai?
No.
No? Benj, no? Josh? Shlomo and Ashmedai? Here? No, okay. There are a whole peckle, a whole group of totally, absolutely wild stories about Shlomo and Ashmedai. Ashmedai is the king of the Shadim. You've never heard any of these stories? Oh, these are with a pit and with this and with that, and they are mamish, like unbelievable. And I can't attempt to remember them properly right now. And I'm not even going to try to send any of them over. Just, if you look, it's in the fifth paragraph of Gittin. You can look over there. Now, the Maharal has a very long commentaries over there explaining what the Gemara is, the significance of the Gemara is. And Mamash, at the very tail end of one of his comments, he like says in an aga fashion, and it's obvious that I don't have to tell you that this is an allegorical Gemara which should not be taken literally at all. Does anyone, does everyone agree with that? Oh, thank you for asking the question. I'm not so sure if everyone agrees with that. But let me go on to another story. With that, I'll tell you a story in Tanakh that we're not going to, was in Shmuel Aleph, we're not going to do, but I'll tell you over the story. Okay, so the Plishtim capture the Arim. The Plishtim capture the Arim. We know that story?
Yeah.
In Shmuel Aleph, yes? Okay, Baruch Hashem. They capture the Arim and they bring the Arim back, and as we know, there's plagues all over the place with, you know, mice and rats going, chip, bite up.
Yeah.
You know what happens? Not comfortable. You know the story?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, fine. So, the Plishtim figure out, you know, like, well, maybe we should send the Arim back. And how did they do it? Anyone remember?
They took cows.
Yeah.
They take nursing mother cows. They lock their calves in the barn. They put the Arim on a wagon. And they said, let's see if the mother cows are willing to take this back. And when they can hear their calves bleeding. And what do you know? That's what happens. That's what happens. Right? Story? Okay. So, the pasuk says, here. Good thing we have a Shmuel here, isn't it? Visharna haparos b'derech al derech b'shemesh b'mesila achas hocho haloch v'go v'osari minus small v'sarni plishtim ocho m'chrem agvul b'shemesh. And the paros and the cows went straight on the way up to the way of Beit Shemesh, and on one road they went while they were mooing, because they heard their calves really, and they did not turn left or right, and the sarni plishtim went after them, da 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 da. Vaisharna Rabbasenu on Perishusha Hayu Omo Shira. Rabbasenu Chazal say they were saying Shira Ron Yiron, Yashiti Snuffy, etc., etc. It's from Zakhaz of Vatazar, as the Gemara says in Vatazar. Okay. Vaisharna Haparos Afaparos on Roshira. And there's six opinions in the Gemara exactly what Shira the Paros said. Rashi over here brings one of them. Let's not worry about it right now. Let's not worry about the significance. And the Maharal says over there, absolutely explicitly, that the question, the Paros did not open their mouths up and start singing. Even though, if you would read the Gemara in a simplistic fashion, you without question would think that. Right? The Maharal says, so that's mamash napshat. That's mamash napshat. Rather, what is the significance? That's not all. So I was saying Shira on this about 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, in a much more yeshivish setting. And I said that over, and a guy who I actually know for a long time, and we're pretty friendly, and it's never easy to say Shira to a friend of yours, says, not mashma from Rashi that way. That's what he said to me. So I said back to him, why does he say that? Because if you look at the Rashi in the Sugya, Rashi doesn't say anything. Rashi just echoes Chazal. Does not say anything at all. So what do you make out of it? Do you understand that Rashi Taka, in fact, takes the Gemara literally or not? Josh says, maybe you should. Right? That's what that one meant. I got your body language right there, one Josh. Maybe you should. So I first of all was like this. I hold it's absolutely pashut that the Maharal would laugh at you. I hold the Maharal would laugh at you. Yeah, just wait a second. I hold the Maharal would absolutely laugh at you and laugh at the suggestion that you think he means to argue with Rashi, because Rashi approach in Midrashei Chazal in places like this is to go, was they go in a straight echo of what the Chazal say, and it's not really a proof one way or the other. That's the Maral probably would say. It could even go farther. I hold, you know, and this is after a lot of thought and, you know, being bothered by the topic for a long time. This is what I call Rashi's extremely deep intellectual elitism. And that is Rashi very deep about these things? See, if I hadn't learned Rashi seriously in Shir Shirim, Kehelis, Tehillim, then I would definitely understand why a person would insist Rashi really needs to take this Gemara literally, da 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 da. Okay, whatever. I would hear that. Thing is I know Rashi other places. And I know Rashi, Davka with those Gemaras with Ashmadai, which again, if you look at the Gemara of Rashi, Rashi doesn't say anything to indicate it should not be taken literally. Where does Rashi say something? Middle of Kohelis. Where Rashi says something.
About the whole
the Maharal understands one of the very key just to be makatsu the whole thing down is one of the key statements of it is Shlomo it says after Ashmadai Ki'ilu threw Shlomo off his throne, it's a question of what he only had. Here, just wait a second. It's a question of what he was left with. Maklo or ki, there's a machlokas how to begaris, kido, kado, there's three possibilities. And the point is, in each one, the Maharal has a major piece of hasbara to explain what's the chiluk, why should you say this, why should you say that, why should you say the next. Each one is pointing out a different power of man, a different mida that's in man. And what was Shlomo left after he made certain mistakes? The Rashi in Kehelis, as I say, takes a scalpel and goes like this and shows what he really wants. And then when you see a Rashi like that, you like revise your opinion of Rashi. And the Rashi in Kehelis is like, you know, as I say, what am I supposed to tell you? That's sort of where he reveals his philosophical depth. He left it for there. That's all I can tell you. Shir Shirim, he does it in a different way. Shir Shirim, the Rashi's and Shir Shirim are just unbelievable. And when you take sum total all of Rashi's works, yeah, maybe they're having a race. Maybe Rabbi Shmuel said, who could see if he gets to the base finish quickly? When I sum total all of Rashi's works, it leads me to conclude the following statement. Rashi's an intellectual elitist, but different than the Rambam. Similar, but different. The Rambam will scream at you and tell you that you're absolutely ignorant, stupid, insulting Chazal for suggesting such a thing. And if you think differently, out of here! That's what the Rambam will do to you. Say, if you're not smart enough to understand me, stop right now. Not worth it. You're just going to damage yourself. Just close my safer and get out of here. That's what the Rambam say. And Rashi does it differently. Rashi says like this. Kasha, okay. It's Kasha. Ah, you don't know that I commented on a Tmura. Not my fault. That's Rashi's intellectual elitism. Is Rashi has an answer for everything. The thing is you don't know where it's going to be. You're going to find, you have a Kasha and Rashi here, Rashi over there answers. You have a Kasha and Rashi here, Rashi over there answers. And as we say, Rashi, it's not Rashi's fault that you're such an ignoramus that you don't know all of Rashi's comments. That's Rashi's intellectual elitism, and he feels just, I'm almost done with this, Josh. And he does go with what I call a straight echo of Chazal, not as much more than the Rambam, but he does have his answers, and you have to find his answers. Fine. Okay. Yeah.